ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 7, Text number 51 and 52, but we will be reading on the board 52, but I will go through 51 because it's a part of the translation. You need not respond to this. Nalam dvijatvam devatam devatvam vishitvam vasur atmaja Prinan aya mukundasya navritam na bahu gyata. Na danum na tapa. Excuse me. Na ijya na shocham na vratani. Cha friyate amalaya bhaktya hari anyat vidambanam. Nadanam natapo nejya Na shocham na vratani cha Priyate malaya bhaktya Hariranyad vidambanam. Na danam na tapo neja Na shocham na vratani cha Priyate malaya bhaktya Harir anyad vidambanam. Na danam na tapo neja Na shocham na vratani cha Priyate malaya bhaktya Harir anyad vidambanam. Excuse me. Harir anyad vidambanam. Please chant.
Nadanam natapo neja.
Ladies, please.
Nana
Na, neither. Danam, charity. Natapa, no austerity. Na, nor. Ija, worship. Na, nor. Shocham, cleanliness. Na vratani, nor execution of great vows. Cha, also, priyate, is satisfied. Amalaya, by spotless. Bhakya, devotional service. Hari, the Supreme Lord. Anyat, other things. Vidambanam, only show. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. My dear friends, O sons of the demons, you cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by becoming perfect Brahmins, demigods, or great saints, or by becoming perfectly good in etiquette or vast learning. None of these qualifications can awaken the pleasure of the Lord, nor by charity, austerity, sacrifice, cleanliness, or vows can one satisfy the Lord. The Lord is pleased only if one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything is simply a show. Please repeat, my dear friends, O sons of the demons, you cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by becoming perfect Brahmins, demigods or great saints, or by becoming perfectly good in etiquette or vast learning. None of these qualifications can awaken the pleasure of the Lord, nor by charity, austerity, sacrifice, cleanliness, or vows can one satisfy the Lord. The Lord is pleased only if one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything is simply a show. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj concludes that one, by the way, this is the chapter, I believe, where Prahlad is instructing his playmates in devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj concludes that one can become perfect by serving the Supreme Lord sincerely by all means. So what does sincerely mean? It means you really mean it. Not just you're saying it. We're not just doing it to look spiritual. We're not just putting on a show. But we're doing it because it's our life and soul and we're ready to die for it. This is what sincerity is. Of course, there are different degrees of sincerity. One may not be ready to die for these principles. One may just be ready to just listen to them. But even to listen to them with eagerness, with a ready mind to try to understand and try to, whatever he understands, implement, that is sincerity. But a person who simply sits there without appreciation, without understanding, without even caring if he understands, but just, for example, attending the class for no other reason to look spiritual, that I'm attending a class, so therefore, ergo, I'm spiritual. Although sitting at a class is very spiritual, but I'm trying to make comparisons now between a person who sincerely listens attentively to each word of the speaker, such as when we hear the wonderful talks of Srila Prabhupada, Even if you can't fully understand his accent at times, at least we have either the papers to read it, or we have the screen on which the letters, the words are printed. So we hang on those words as our life and soul because they are meaningful, they are important, and they are necessary for us to truly become happy. So this is what sincerity is. It's a recognition, an acknowledgement that my life is imperfect. And unless I attend to this, unless I give my whole heart to this, unless I give my all to this, and I'm ready to sacrifice whatever I'm capable of for the glorification and satisfaction of the Lord, then I'm not sincere. This is what sincerity is. This is what is needed. Sincerity. There's enough show business in the world. We don't need it in the temple. What we want is true eagerness, appreciation, and dedication. And this is an innermost quality, although it does show itself in different kinds of devotional service, such as you see the wonderful deity dressings today. You see the beautiful floral arrangements, the fountain that we have here, the beautiful pictures. This is all sincere devotional service. And one of the factors of sincere devotional service is that it evokes something from the heart of the viewer or the receiver. For example, when Srila Prabhupada talked, it evoked something from our heart. We were moved. We were stirred. We were motivated to do something. This is the nature of sincerity. And the more sincere we become, of course, the more we will be able to touch and move and stir the hearts of others whom we may want to help and assist along the path of devotional service. So this word sincerity is very important. It's very significant. Material elevation to life as a Brahman, demigod, rishi, and so on, are not causes for developing love of Godhead. But if one sincerely, again Prabhupada uses this word, sincerely engages in the service of the Lord, his Krishna consciousness is complete. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9:30, Api Chet Sudaracharo Bhajite Mam Ananya Bhak Sadur Eva Sa Mantavya Samyag Vyavasito Hisa. As Prabhupada mentions here, Srila Prabhupada mentions, but if one sincerely engages, so there are two ways of engaging in devotional service. You can engage in it indifferently, uncaringly, thoughtlessly, or with our mind on something other than what we're doing, without the desire to please Krishna, to please Prabhupada. If we do our service in this mood, it is not sincere service. It is merely mechanical service, robotic service. You actually can train robots to do the same thing. Or monkeys. Or any animal. You can train dogs to bring your newspaper to you. You can train them to do different activities of devotional service. They don't understand it. So if we don't give our understanding, we don't give our love, we don't give our heart, we don't give our whole consciousness to trying to please Krishna and the devotees, then it is mechanical. And we must always ask ourselves, I know I have this problem all the time. Is this mechanical service or is this loving service? Prabhupada uses this term over and over again. Loving devotional service. Not just devotional, but loving devotional service. Sincere devotional service. He wanted us to give our whole heart. And when he saw us giving our whole heart, he was so pleased, so happy, and was giving out benedictions like they were going out of style. Devotees expressed were able to do things which were unimaginable before they had come to Krishna consciousness, by the mercy, by the blessings of Srila Prabhupada. Quote, even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. Unquote. To develop unalloyed love for Krishna is the perfection of life. Other processes may be helpful. So, these other processes are not being ruled out. Probably that is a question that some of you may have been thinking of to ask at the end. Well, what about these processes that we are doing? They are all helpful. But they must all come to the final conclusion. And the final conclusion is, I can't live without Krishna. I want to serve Krishna 24 hours a day. Please, Krishna, enable me to serve you better and better so that I can please you more and more. Always remember Krishna. Never forget Krishna. These two are important principles. All the injunctions and prohibitions of the scriptures are based upon these two principles. They lead to these two principles. To develop unalloyed love for Krishna is the perfection of life. Other processes may be helpful, but if one does not develop his love for Krishna, these other processes are simply a waste of time, which is what I was saying before. We must not do them mechanically, indifferently, robotically. We must do them with our whole heart. And we must remind ourselves, ask ourselves, am I doing with this with my heart or am I just doing this? They're very important. Of course, sometimes I know we have to do things rapidly and we may not be able to think of Krishna at that moment. But the important thing is to have that as a goal. And when we have a moment or two of respite, then again the mind should come back to Krishna. When we're cooking, dressing the deities, cleaning the floor, leading the kirtan, whatever we may be doing, ultimately our mind, our heart, and our body should be merged in the one thought of pleasing and serving and loving Krishna. Dharma svanushtita pumsam vishvakishena katasuya notpadayed yadi ratim shrama evahi kevalam, which means duties or dharma executed by men regardless of occupation are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke the attraction for the message of the Supreme Lord. Such an important verse. I'll read it again. Duties executed by men, regardless, means women too, regardless of occupation, are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the Supreme Lord. So, our activities should gradually be stimulating us, be encouraging us, be enthusing us to want to hear this incredibly great, wonderful message of the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, and to hear the pure devotee Srila Prabhupada when he speaks. This is what all our activities must lead us toward, to come to the point where we want to associate with only that which is pure and perfect and good and noble. So, that ends the purport, and I would like to now begin... Excuse me? The last that I have in my book is Duties Executed by Men. Yeah, that's the last... Oh, yes, thank you very much, because that's very important. Let me read it all again. Duties, dharma, executed by men, regardless of occupation, are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the Supreme Lord. That's from the Bhagavatam 1:2:8. The test of perfection is one's unalloyed devotion to the Lord. This is, again, from the 7th canto, the 7th chapter. And it was verse number 51 and 52. So today, being the auspicious appearance day of Lord Nrsingadev, I thought I would try my best to recall the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj, which leads to the glorious appearance of Lord Nrsingadev. And for the three quarters of the pastime, I will simply do the best I can through memory. And the last quarter of it, I have in my book. It's the climax of it. And I feel it reads much better than I could actually remember it because it's very dramatically written. And it pulls us into that pastime in a very involving and intriguing fashion. Excuse me. First of all... We ask ourselves, who is Hiranyakashipu? We start from that point. Long, long ago, there were two doorkeepers in this to the seventh gate in the Vaikuntha planets, and one was named Jai and the other was named Vijay. And they were guards, and they allowed whoever they felt should be admitted into the kingdom of Vaikuntha. So it so chanced to be that the four Kumaras, the great sages, the sons of Lord Brahma, perfect jnanis, wanted to visit the Supreme Lord. And for some reason or other, obviously a part of the pastime of the Lord, Jai and Vijay did not recognize these four Kumaras as who they were. So they forbade them from entering the Vaikuntha planet. Said, no, you can't come in here. So they became very upset because of the fact that their whole life was dedicated and devoted to serving God. And why were they being forbidden? They led a perfectly pure life. So they should, by all rights, be allowed to enter. So they became upset and they said, well, you're a bunch of, you're just envious of us. You don't even belong where you are. The Lord must have made a mistake, or you sneaked in and you took this position. You don't have any right to be here. So they cursed them. And the curse ended up that that Jai and Vijay would have to take birth in the material world three times. They were given a choice, you see. They could they three times as an enemy of the Lord, seven times as a friend of the Lord. So they chose to get, they wanted to get out as fast as possible, so they became, they chose to be enemies, which meant they became big-time demons. So those demons were, one was named Hiranyakashipu, and the other was Hiranyaksha. So we already learned earlier in the year that how the Lord fought with Hiranyaksha, fought with the clubs, and then they fought with fists. And then the Lord, finally, he had a good fight, and he just gave him a mild slap on the ear, and he was out, finished, gone, till the next birth, which would be Ravan Kumbhakarna. But the other demon, his name was Hiranyakashipu. And when he heard that the Lord had killed his brother, he was very angry, very upset. And he felt that the Lord should not have even interfered, because the understanding was that the Lord treats everyone equally. Well, in one sense, he does see everyone equally and he treats equal. But when devotees are being in any way harmed or threatened or disturbed, the Lord does not show equality in the sense that he protects his devotees. And sometimes he must kill the demons in order to do that. So Hiranyakashipu was arguing in this manner that Hiranyaksha was treated unfairly, and therefore he's going to take vengeance on Lord Vishnu. He's going to get after him, and he's going to try to kill him. So he went hunting for him, went looking after him, going here, going there, and finally he found him. So he ran after him with a trident. So the Lord decided he didn't want to play any games with him, so he just made himself invisible. And he entered his nostril, and then from his nostril he entered into his heart. So he couldn't find the Lord, but he knew he must have been somewhere. So sometimes these demons, they think, they because they have a little power, that they can conquer the Supreme Lord. That he knew he was, that the Lord was powerful, and he wasn't even that sure that he could actually defeat him. But he was so angry that he didn't even think carefully. Anyway, he decided that he's going to find the Lord, and when he finds him, he's going to kill him. But in order to be sure that he could kill him, he felt he needed more power. And in order to get more power, he felt the best way to do this would be to go to Mount Mandarachala and perform a very harsh, very severe austerity. And that austerity would be, he would stand on his tiptoes with his arms raised up and his eyes up in the air, and he would stand there for at least 100 years in the time of the demigods, which means thousands of years. So that was his practice. And day after day went by, and he just stood there. Meanwhile, the demigods saw that this was an opportune moment to attack Hiranyakashipu's kingdom, and that's what they did. So they plundered the kingdom, they took the jewels, they took the wealth, they took the gold, And they even took Hiranyakashipu's wife because she was pregnant. And because she was pregnant, they felt, well, there's going to be a big-time demon born in that belly, from that belly, and we should just kill him when he comes out. So just as they were escorting her away, they were going to take her to one of the other planets, who showed up but the incredible devotional Narad Muni. Narad Muni said, what are you doing to Indra? He said, well, we're taking her. Why are you taking her away? She's innocent. She's sinless. She's a chaste lady. So he said, well, she's got a demon inside her. We don't want that demon to do the kind of devastation that his father has been doing. So Narada Muni said, you cannot kill the child that is in her womb because he's a pure devotee of the Lord. So he said, really? He said, yes. So you leave her to me. So they decided they would leave, go back to their planets, and they, interestingly enough, they circumambulated her in recognition and in respect of the fact that Prahlad Maharaj was in there, and they showed their respect to the pure devotee on the say-so of Narada Muni. So they left, and the Narada Muni took Queen Kayadu to his ashram, and he began to instruct her in spiritual knowledge and began to give her guidance and information on what the truth is, who we are, what the purpose of life is, why we're here, what we should do in order to not have to repeat the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. And he went through all of these different teachings. And while these teachings were being narrated to her, Prahlad Maharaj, who was in the womb, was listening to all of these. And interestingly enough, some scientists have actually tested this, and they actually found out that within the last months of the fetus's life in the womb, they can actually remember. They did some tests, and I read those tests, and they were quite compelling. So it is a fact that, and I won't go into the tests here, because that's not germane to this particular talk, and it will take us into a different mood. But suffice it to say that Prahlad Maharaj heard these instructions. And what's more, he internalized them. He absorbed them. He literally chewed them, digested them, and assimilated them, and they became a part of his being. Consequently, when he finally did take birth later on, he would manifest all the different qualities of a devotee. Let's switch the scene. We cut to another scene. We cut back to Mount Mandarachala. Hiranyakasipu is still standing on his toes after who knows how many thousands of years. And flames are coming out of his head. Smoke is coming out of the head. And it's beginning to affect the entire universe. In fact, the demigods, they're starting to cough because there's no clean, clear air. Everything is very smoky. So they approach Lord Brahma. And they beg Lord Brahma, please, he wants a benediction from you. So would you please go to him, find out what he wants, so that we can begin to breathe clean, clear air again? Sounds a little like L.A. In the morning rush hour. So he said, would you please do something about it? And he said, yes. So Lord Brahma went with a few other important demigods, and they went down to Mount Mandarachala, and they saw... They didn't see Hiranyakasipu. They were looking for him. They couldn't find him. But what they did see is it looked like a human being covered with all sorts of sand, all sorts of dirt, and branches coming out of it, bramble coming out of it, grass coming out of it. And they looked at it closely, and it was an anthill. And there were ants running up and down all around it. And then Lord Brahma realized, wow, this is Hiranyakasipu. He's become a skeleton. He's maintaining his life force through his bones. Because, as you know, when you have a skeleton, it does not stand up unless there are muscles to hold it up. Otherwise, it will just flop to the ground. But by the force of his incredible will, he was maintaining this position with his arms up and on his tiptoes. And because he hadn't moved for so many years, the ants came and they built a hill around it. And in building that hill, they also ate his flesh. They ate his the flesh, they ate his muscles, they ate the fat, they ate everything that was tasty. They didn't discriminate between tasty food, non-tasty. They just ate it. And so, Lord Brahma realized that the only way he was going to stop this demon from exuding this incredible, horrible smoke is he would have to give him some benediction. So what he did is that he took some holy water out of his his little pot, and he sprinkled it on Hiranyakasipu. And Hiranyakasipu immediately burst out of the out of that anthill, and immediately he had a regular flesh body. He looked very handsome, muscular, attractive, becoming. And he himself looked at himself, and he was very impressed by the way he looked. And Lord Brahma says, "You are absolutely amazing. I have never seen someone perform austerities to that degree. You take the cake. So tell me, what would you like to receive as a result of your hard work?" He said, "Oh, Lord Brahma," he bowed his head and he said, "I just want something small." He says, "Just say it. I'll give it." He says, "Just make me immortal." He says, "Make you immortal? I'm not immortal. How can I make you immortal?" He says, "The only one who can make you immortal is the Lord." So Hiranyakasipu, not to get discouraged, figures, well, he'll outfox. He'll use cunning to make himself immortal in an indirect way. He says, "Okay, will you please give me some benedictions?" He says, "Yes, I can give you general benedictions which have to do with the material life." He said, "Please, don't let me be killed inside a house or outside a house, in the air or on the ground, in the day or in the night. Let me not be killed by any human being, demigod, demon, animal, fish, reptile. Let me not be killed by anything, anyone. Whatever you have created, let me not be killed by it. And in addition to this, please just give me all mystic powers as well." So he said, "Granted, you got it. It's yours." So Hiranyakasipu really felt powerful now. He felt he was ready to run the universe, to rule the universe, because he was invincible. He could not be defeated. So he decided his reign of terror. He would go from planet to planet and throw the demigods out of their position. In other words, they would either serve him or they would leave. In other words, they became his slaves, or they would just get out. Anyway, they basically were unemployed. What happened was that no unemployment insurance either for the demigods. Anyway, what happened for them was that they would have to do whatever he asked, and they became very upset. Hiranyakasipu was so powerful that if he wanted to rain, he would just will it, and it would rain. If he wants the sun to shine, it would shine. If he wants fruits to grow out of season, they would grow out of season. If he wants clouds, they would come. If he wants snow, he would. If he wants a mountain to appear, whatever Hiranyakasipu wanted, he would get, because he had those mystic perfections. Despite all of this, he was not very happy. And why was he not happy? Does anybody remember the reason he wasn't very happy? He wasn't very happy because he was always drinking lots and lots of intoxicated drinks. And it was making him intoxicated. And he had material pleasure, but as we all know, material pleasure lasts only so long. And it's very limited. And it cannot give us the inner satisfaction that the soul is forever craving in association with the Supreme Soul. So in spite of his many powers, he was very disappointed and displeased. But nonetheless, he felt that he was the biggest and the bestest, and therefore that in itself was his only satisfaction. Anyway, the demigods were very upset. They were very disturbed. So they went to Lord Vishnu and they begged for mercy. They said, "Lord, whenever we're in trouble, whenever we have difficulties, whenever we have trials, tribulations, we can't handle them, we beg for your mercy, and somehow you always help us. So we're, again, begging you to please get rid of this scourge on the earth, Hiranyakasipu, because we've lost our positions, we've become bedraggled, we've become downtrodden, so to speak. Many of us are not even working now. Would you please get rid of this guy? So Lord says, I am coming very soon. You need not worry. Just relax. Just stay peaceful, and all will be well. So what happened was that finally Hiranyakasipu, he had four children, and one of these children was known as Prahlad. Prahlad was the child who had been in his mother's womb when Narad Muni had given instructions. And so, since Prahlad was 5 years old, it was time for him to get an education. So his father put him under the tutelage of Amarka, and what was the other one? Sanda and Amarka. Yeah. So he put him under their tutelage, and they guided him, and they taught him, and they were giving him information about material knowledge. You know, things like the goals of life, how to achieve the different goals of life, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And to Prahlad Maharaj, this was beyond him. This is actually beginner stuff. This is kindergarten. He was already on pure love of God level, so he wasn't so interested in, you know, doing good things. Doing good things came automatically if you genuinely and sincerely loved Krishna and you served him. You knew immediately, intuitively, exactly what had to be done. Also, he was not interested in the four different ways of accomplishing various goals, such as through negotiation. That is one way. And another way was by giving gifts and favors. And a third way was by dividing and conquering. And last, by fighting and battling. So this did not appeal to Prahlad Maharaj. Why? Because he said to his teachers, I don't see anybody as my friend or my enemy. I love everybody. So where did you hear this? We have enemies. The demigods are our enemies. He says, no, everybody is my friend. So he tried to give them understanding. He was completely absorbed in the consciousness of the Supreme Lord. He was totally Vishnu conscious or Krishna conscious. And as a result, he felt his at-one-ment or his attunement, his oneness with all other beings, because he did not identify himself with his body, he identified himself as the soul. And since the little individual soul, the infinitesimal soul, is one with the supreme soul in quality, he felt that he was connected with the supreme good. And through that connection, he also knew that everyone was connected to the supreme good. And consequently, by extension, he felt that he was brother to everyone in this world. He saw no distinctions. He saw no differences. Everyone was his friend. No one was his enemy. Friend in the sense that we're all brothers and sisters. Not I like you and I dislike you. Liking and disliking, or the dualities of life, are all based on the fact that you increase my sense gratification or my sense pleasure. I like you. You flatter me. You give me nice foods. You give me a nice house. You give me nice clothing. You give me romance. You make me feel like I'm a lord. I like you. You make me feel that I'm not a lord. You don't give me pleasure. You don't give me good food. You give me bad clothes. You say bad words about me. I hate you. This is, I love you, I hate you. All living beings are born into delusion, arisen from dualities, from hate and love. So everyone is born into this delusion, and they're afflicted by this. Prahlad Maharaj, his father told him, please, would you bring my son to the palace? I would like to talk to him, see what he's learned from his teachers and see how he's progressing as a demon. Well, he had a big surprise coming. So when Prahlad Maharaj, when he went to the palace, and Hiranyakasipu looked at him, and he looked so beautiful, so pure, so lovable, put him on his lap, and he says, "Please, tell me, what is the best of the teachings that you have learned from your teacher, Sandanamarka?" He said, "My dear king of the demons, household life is full of anxieties. So you're wasting your time in your household situation. It's like a dark well without any water in it. And all you're getting is suffering. And look at you, you're just suffering, suffering, wondering if anybody is going to take your position." He says, "It's suffering. So what you should do, my dear king of the demons, is you should renounce your kingdom. You should go to the forest and take shelter of Lord Vishnu and worship him." "Who?" "Lord Vishnu." Well, Lord Vishnu was his enemy. He's the one he wants to kill. He's the one that he did all the austerities for in order to be able to conquer. So at first, since it was the first time he was hearing this, he said, "Oh, the foolishness of little children. They pick up this and they pick up that and they mouth it." He said to Sandanamarka, "Please, take him back to the school and make sure that there are no demigods in the form of children who may be instructing him in this knowledge of love of Lord Vishnu. Make sure that he's properly trained." So they said, "Yes, yes." And he asked, where did this come from? "We don't know. We didn't teach it to him." So they took him back and they tried to teach him more of this materialistic knowledge. And when he didn't respond to it, when he resisted it, they threatened him. When he was fearless of the threats, they decided they would bring him back to his father. Father sat him on his lap. He was expecting that there was to be some transformation. So he put him on his lap, and he said this time, "Please, what is the best of your knowledge? Tell me." So Prahlad says, "Well, the best knowledge that I know is that if you hear about Lord Vishnu, chant his holy name, remember the Lord's glories, serve his lotus feet, worship him, pray to him, serve him in practical service, give up your body, your mind, and your words for him. If you do all this and just totally worship the Lord, serve the Lord, love the Lord, surrender totally to the Lord, that is the best knowledge that I have gotten." He says, "What?" And he took him, he was on his lap, and he was just a little boy, and throw him off his lap onto the hard marble. The boy fell down, but he wasn't angry. Hiranyakasipu said to him, "Is this what you're teaching my son? To be an enemy? He's become my enemy. I don't want him here. He doesn't belong here. So I want him killed. Let's get rid of him." So he summoned some of his demon warriors. They came in with tridents. And Hiranyakasipu says, "Chop him up. Get rid of him. I want him out of this world." So those two demons with the tridents, they tried to dig the tridents into his skin, but somehow or other, they couldn't penetrate him. And what was Prahlad Maharaj's understanding and attitude, and this is what's most beautiful, is that he did not pray to the Lord to save him. He didn't say, "My dear Lord, please save me. Please enable me to go on living." His mood was, is that, "My dear Lord, if this is what you want, if you want to kill me, then you can kill me. If you want to save me, you can save me. What I think and what I say and what I want is irrelevant. The only thing that's relevant is what you want. So do with me what you want." So they tried the trident. That didn't work. So they tried other means of killing Prahlad Maharaj. So they put him under the hooves of an elephant. And the elephant trampled over him. Nothing happened. They put him in a pit where there were snakes all over it. And they were biting him like cobras. no effect whatsoever. He was thrown from a mountaintop. Can you imagine? You know, several thousand feet up, and he just landed on the earth very gently, as if the earth, like a mother, was just enfolding him in her arms as he landed. Then they tried all sorts of incantations and spells to try to kill him. They couldn't do that. Then they poisoned him. The poison didn't work. They starved him. They wouldn't give him any food. He didn't feel hunger. They put him in the biting, icy cold. He didn't even shiver. They put him in the blasting heat. He wasn't even sweating. What's going on here? Hiranyakasipu, they put him in the blasting winds, which would normally just kill anybody, like these typhoons or these tornadoes. It didn't affect him. They drowned him, and he lived underwater. They could not kill him, and Hiranyakasipu was very, very upset, very disturbed that he could not have his son destroyed. Anyway, Sunda and Amarka, they promised, they said, "Well, Lord, give us another chance. Just, we're sure that your son, he's obviously going through some kind of a phase. He'll outgrow it. And just let us work on him." So they figured they try to brain dirty him. Not they don't brain water. They're going to brain. His brain is already washed pure as pure can be. So they try to brain dirty him and try to again give him materialistic knowledge of different ways in which a superior deals with an inferior. Such as rewarding them, such as pacifying them, different ways in which giving gifts to them. Anyway, they taught them these different materialistic means or stratagems how to deal in the material world. So Prahlad Maharaj was not at all interested in all this. In fact, what happened is his case grew worse, according to the vision of the demons. What happened was that whenever the two teachers would leave either to go and eat for lunch or for physical training, and he would let the children just be by themselves, Prahlad Maharaj, what he did is he started to preach to all of his demon playmates. And the first thing he said to them, he says, "Look, we're all little kids, but we seem to think that we're going to go on playing forever and life is going to be just lots of fun, and we're being taught that sense pleasure and sense gratification is the end all and be all." He said, "This is all a lot of rot. This is untrue. Don't accept it. Reject it. The only thing that's really true is that if we develop our love for the Supreme Lord Vishnu, we chant his name, we hear about him, we glorify him, we think about him, we praise him, we honor him, we work for him, we serve him. Everything is done in his honor, in his glorification. If we do this, we'll be inwardly happy. Sense pleasure, such as playing with toys, winning at games, well, that pleasure lasts for a moment and it's all gone. But if we have the inner pleasure of communion, of connection, relationship with the Supreme Lord, that stays with us." So the boys, they actually understood. He had such potency that he enabled those children to understand exactly what he meant. And they were chanting, you know, I don't know if they were chanting Hare Krishna, but they were chanting glories to Lord Vishnu. So the teachers, they were beginning to hear these kids. They were chanting, they were reciting different mantras which glorified the Supreme Lord, and they became very upset and very disturbed, and they decided to bring Prahlad back to his father for final action. The final action would be is that since Hiranyakashipu, they thought, was the most powerful person in the world, then Hiranyakashipu will have to kill him. Since they can't kill his nature to want to preach about Krishna, to want to glorify Krishna, and to convert his playmates or his schoolmates. So now I will come to the point where Prahlad Maharaj is brought to Hiranyakasipu, and he's in the palace. in the assembly room, just to picture it, like we have that picture back there. Little boy. The boy stood before the demon with folded hands, peaceful, mild, and gentle. Based on his age and behavior, it was not proper for his father to chastise him. But Hiranyakasipu could not contain his surging hatred. Glaring at his son with crooked eyes, the demon harshly shouted, "You stubborn, disobedient fool! Today I will kill you! When I am angry, all the planets and their rulers shake! By whose power have you become so bold and fearless, so as to overstep my power to rule you? By whose power?" "The source of my power," explained Prahlad, "is the same as yours. Indeed, there's only one source of all power, the Supreme Lord."
"No."
"Yes."
"I'm the most powerful."
"No, Lord Vishnu is."
"Wrong."
"Father, please stop acting like a demon."
"Shut up,"
raged the king, pointing his index finger like a dagger at Prahlad. Prahlad says, "Stop distinguishing between enemies and friends."
"I said shut up."
"And become equal-minded toward all living beings."
"Did you hear me?"
"You have no enemy in this world except your misguided, uncontrolled mind."
"What did you say?"
Hiranyakasipu was shocked. "Father, if you conquer your mind, you won't have any enemies."
"You rascal! You think you're better than me, huh? Is that what you think?"
"No, Father.
Only people who are about to die think like you."
"Father, please."
"Let's see your Lord Vishnu save you now."
"Please."
"Where do you think he is now, huh?"
"He's everywhere."
"Everywhere?"
"Yes, the Lord is everywhere."
"Everywhere? Is he in this pillar?"
Hiranyakasipu challenged, pointing to one nearby. "Yes."
"Fool! Idiot!"
Enraged, he rose, stepped down from his throne, and smashed his fist loudly against the marble pillar. Ow! Got to wear my gloves.
"Then where is he? Show me! Where?"
"He's there, Father."
"Then,
from inside the column came a frightening sound. It was horrendous and tumultuous, so much so that it frightened all the other demons in the assembly hall. Suddenly, a most amazing being, roaring and raging, burst out of the pillar, the marble shattering all about. It was neither a man nor a lion, but a combination of both. It was Lord Vishnu's incarnation of Lord Narasingha Ki! Lord Narasingha Ki! Lord Narasingha Ki! Hiranyakasipu was amazed. "What kind of creature is this?" he wondered. Lord Narasingadev looked awesome and formidable. His eyes were angry. His teeth, they were deadly. His mane was shining and his razor-sharp tongue swiveled about like a dueling sword. His nostrils and gaping mouth looked like a mountain caves, and he held a conch shell, disc, club, lotus, and various weapons in his many hands.
"He thinks he can kill me," thought Hiranyakasipu. "Never!"
The demon grabbed his club and attacked the Lord as a lion might attack an elephant. Enveloped by the Lord's effulgence, the angry demon began beating the Lord furiously with his club. However, Lord Narasingha captured him, just as the eagle Garuda easily captures a snake. But then the Lord deliberately allowed Hiranyakasipu to slip from his hands as a cat plays with a mouse. Watching from the sky, the gods became perturbed. What would the demon do now, they wondered. Escaping from the Lord's hands, Hiranyakasipu thought,
"See? He's afraid of me!"
Prahlad's father, slightly fatigued, decided to rest for a few minutes. But as soon as he felt refreshed, he grabbed his sword and shield and attacked the Lord with tremendous power. Sometimes Hiranyakasipu fought in the air, and at other times he fought on the ground. He was completely unpredictable. Lord Narasingha laughed loudly. Then he easily yet forcefully captured the demon, whose limbs wriggled about helplessly. Next, in the assembly hall doorway, the Lord placed Prahlad's father on his lap
and tore the demon to pieces with his sharp nails. It was a ghastly sight. The Lord's mouth and mane sprinkled with drops of blood, his ferocious eyes blazing with anger, his neck decorated with the demon's intestines, and one of his hands holding the king's heart. Licking the edge of his mouth with his tongue, he tossed Hiranyakashipu's mangled body aside.
Nisingadeva ki! Lord Nisingadeva ki! Lord Nisingadeva ki!
So we will now take 5 seconds to look at the picture of what I just narrated in the back, please. 5 seconds to fully cognize, internalize that incredible sight.
Okay, so. Lord Brahma had given the king several blessings, which appeared to make the demon invincible and immortal. But the omniscient Lord, without violating any of Brahma's promises, counteracted them all. For example, Hiranyakasapu could not be killed on the land or in the sky. So the Lord killed him where? On his lap, yes. He could not be destroyed either inside or outside. So the Lord destroyed him in where? A doorway, yes. Nor could he be slain during the day or night. So the Lord slew him at when? Dusk, yes. And he could not be executed by any weapon or by any person. Thus the Lord appeared as a half man, half lion, and executed him with his sharp nails. Seeing their leader dead, thousands of the demon's loyal warriors with raised weapons fiercely attacked Lord Nrisimha. But the Lord, roaring thunderously, destroyed them all with the ends of his sharp nails. Then he sat down on the king's opulent throne, and the heavenly goddesses showered flowers on him. The gods in the sky began beating drums and kettle drums triumphantly. The female angels began dancing rhapsodically, and the Gandharvas started singing sweetly. Then all the chief gods and angels offered their obeisances and prayers to the Lord, glorifying, praising, and thanking him for his mercy. Now they could fearlessly return to their individual planets and resume their former administrative duties to the world. Despite the gods' beautiful prayers, Lord Nrisimha remained extremely angry at Hiranyakasipu for having so callously abused Prahlad. Thus none of the celestials dared to approach him now. They therefore asked Prahlad, "Please, you go forth and try to pacify your father." Excuse me, go to pacify Lord Nrisimha. The boy approached the feet of the Lord and with folded hands prostrated himself before him. Lord Nrisimha became ecstatically affectionate toward Prahlad and placed his hand on his devotee's head, blessing him. In response, the child's heart overflowed with love. His eyes streamed with tears, and blissful symptoms became manifest throughout his small body. He then offered the Lord his most heartfelt prayers, repeatedly lauding the glories of loving devotional service as the end-all and be-all of true happiness. Prahlad's prayers pacified the Lord completely, and he said, "My dear Prahlad, I am very much pleased with you. Kindly ask me for any blessing you would like." "O Lord," replied Prahlad, "all I want is to have no materialistic desires in my heart." The Lord replied, "A devotee like you never desires anything materialistic, in this life or in the next. Nonetheless, I order you to enjoy the wealth of your dynasty and become its king for a long time. At the same time, as you perform your duties, you should always think of me, serve me, and worship me. Then you will not become attached to such wealth and will remain my devotee." Prahlad said, "My father committed many offenses against you and me. I beg that you please excuse him for all those offenses." The Lord assured him, "Because you were born in his family, not only has your father, Hiranyakasipu, been purified by, but the 21 previous fathers you had in your past lifetimes have also been purified.
In fact, your entire dynasty has been cleansed, and those who follow your example will naturally become my devotees. You are the best example, so others should follow in your footsteps. Prahlad lowered his head modestly and thanked the Lord in his heart. The Lord then looked directly at Lord Brahma and said, just as it is dangerous to feed milk to a poisonous snake, it is equally dangerous to give blessings to demons. They are by nature savage and envious. Therefore, I warn you to not give such blessings to them again. Lord Brahma, appreciating the Lord's guidance, worshipped him. Then Lord Nrsimha disappeared. The Lord showed that he personally protects his devotees from harm and ultimately annihilates demoniac persons. This serves fair warning to anyone and everyone to never violate his commandments or try to falsely assume his powerful position, for the result can only be disastrous. Whoever hears or recites this narration about the omnipotence of the Supreme Lord Narasimha and the activities of his glorious devotee Prahlad will not only be liberated from materialistic miseries, but will surely ascend to Vaikuntha, the realm of non-anxiety. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. All glories to Lord Nrsimha ki. Hare Krishna. Any comments or any questions anyone would like to make? You have a, yes, Rudakarva Prabhu. If he gave that they would be delivered, but it didn't say when they would be delivered. And say what date, or because there was already there was a curse, and that had to be fulfilled. His deliverance came after the third, when he was when he came as what is that? Yes, thank you. Shishupal and Dantavakra, then they went back home, back to Godhead. In fact, that passage is very interesting. Shishupal actually enters into the light, stays there, into the Brahma Jyoti, then from there passes back to Vaikuntha. Any other question or any comment, anyone? Well, it's very instructive. Yes, you have a question, Doc? Or you're stretching? You bring him the microphone. No, they should, somebody can bring. Otherwise, talk. No mic? Okay, anyway, it's just good and loud. I'll repeat your question.
It's about that picture. I just like to share my personal way to see that in my home to realize that his right through his soul of life, his charm, was his
What is your question?
Oh, the question is that makes sense for you.
I can't understand what he's saying. I'm sorry. Can you speak loud, please? You don't have to look at the picture. Look to me. I'll hear you. I'll try to lip read you.
Okay, I saw the picture. He's like straight through the solar plexus, right on his stomach, right?
Yeah.
That's the ego house, like going through this
So is it your doubt that he could be killed that way?
No, it's saying that the solar plexus, he ripped it apart. Yeah. That was where the ego resides.
I don't know enough about that. My ego is so dense that I haven't figured that out where it even is yet. I'm still trying to find it. Okay. Anyway, the important point that we have to keep in mind is obey the Lord. This is most important by obeying Him, following His rules, following His regulations. Those who execute my duties according to my injunction, who follow His teachings faithfully, become free from the bondage of fruit of work. But those who, out of envy, disregard these teachings and do not follow them, are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled, ruined in their endeavors for perfection. And that ends it here. Hare Krishna. Thank you.